there's a great question here from Sister JT. You're in Austin, right, Sister JT? The question is concerning the public benefits in the executive order. Do you know, can they be made retroactive on people who use such things as Medicaid or CHIP in the past prior to the executive action order? Sorry.
That's a great question, and it's something that we're evaluating right now. So we belong to a coalition called Refugee Council USA, and they do work in concert with us. It's many of the resettlement agencies, and they work about advocacy for a variety of populations. Some of the individuals that we work with in that coalition have pulled some case law and have said that there is a possibility that some of this could be considered retroactively applied. At this point in time, we don't know, and we are not certain, but I think that is on people's minds, and it is a possibility. If the order becomes law, and if it is indeed the text that we see here, we will be evaluating that especially.
Here's another question, and this might be for you, Matt. When the ban is lifted after 120 days, and we go from the projected 120,000 to 50,000, are the refugees that were already cleared for travel going to come without more vetting, or will they have to go through the vetting process again?
Yeah, a very good question, and some of the estimates that we've heard are that there are some 67,000 refugees who are essentially through the vetting process and ready to come in the coming months. But one thing that happens with the vetting process is that certain checks, whether it's a security check or a health check, might have a time connected to it. So, for like a health check, for example, is good for so many days, and then you have to get checked again because something might have happened with your health. Or also, so part of what happens is just even in the regular course of things, even if they don't add a single vetting step to this, it's likely that a lot of the people's clearances for different things would have timed out. So Part of starting up the program again will be people going through those steps again. And then I guess the other question that we'd have is whether some, and this is a really serious and sobering question, is that whether some of the individuals, for example, those who are from Syria, whether there will continue to be a bar for people from Syria or from the other six countries that are currently banned under the entry ban as well. So I think that's part of it. I think the other thing is if they do add vetting steps, then also those would have to be, whatever those are, would have to, individuals who are currently in process would have to go through those as well.
Matt, here's a related question from Emma. Any word on if the list of countries has been expanded?
Again, all these are really good questions. And at this point, the list is not expanded. One step that they pointed to, we're focusing a lot on the refugee side of this, but also part of the new vetting procedures will be around immigrants or non-immigrants who are coming from these seven countries. But one thing that they've said as they're looking at that vetting is they've said they're specifically looking at practices of certain countries. And so if certain countries are not providing information that's needed either to pinpoint the person's identity on one hand or any possible security risks, if a country is not providing those to the United States, then that also could be a possible reason for other countries to be added to the list. That's sort of what seems implicit in that language. So that's a very good question.
Okay. Another refugee question. Will refugees already in the United States face increased surveillance?
I think that's a that's a good question, and I think something that as we're looking at vetting the vetting procedure, we're usually just thinking of, okay, what happens to a refugee right up until they are admitted to the United States? And then you generally think, well, they're here, so then there's no vetting that goes on after that. There have been various proposals, especially by some in the House over the last year and a half or so, that would impose vetting that would occur even after somebody's admitted to the United States. So I think that'll be something to really watch carefully as these new vetting procedures are issued. And one thing that I think even the president has alluded to is the possibility of a registration of some kind that would be made that would presumably possibly be part of a future tracking of people after they get here.
Okay. Here's a, hopefully this is a yes or no. Are the Karen refugees from Burma in Thailand, are they exempt from the 120-day shutdown of refugee resettlement?
Basically, everybody's subject to the 120-day with the exception of there may be some cases outside the seven countries of extremely, where there's serious humanitarian issues, where there might be some waivers possible. But I think that remains to be seen on that. But after the 120 days, it's for countries like Burma. Especially for Karen, many as advocates know, many of the Karen people are Christian, Buddhists as well, but many are Christian. So generally, for other countries, we expect resettlement to resume.
What about Haitian entrants? Are they subject to the 120-day rule?
To my knowledge, there's not resettlement of Haitians. So when Haitians would come to the United States, they would be coming to the extent that they would be refugees. It would be more likely that they would come and seek asylum in the United States. So they wouldn't be barred from seeking asylum, but some of the things that Melissa mentioned earlier, for example, detention could be very well be part of what they're subject to when they arrive.
Couple more questions, Matt. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. What is the anticipated 120th day? You know, was it to start from when the document was signed on the 27th?
Yeah. So I think it helped me with my math here, but I think that would be May 27th. I think.
Okay.
Whatever the 120 days is, given 30 days or 31 days a month. But essentially, May. We're looking at the end of May.
Okay. Do you have any idea how the new vetting process will differ from the one that currently exists?
I think the question on that one slide, maybe slide 12, I think, that asks whether the new vetting process for refugees will essentially be the strict process that's been there with maybe a few minor additions, or whether it will be really something wholly draconian, I guess, and sort of beyond the current system. So I think we have to wait and see on that. I think part of that, though, is not just waiting and seeing, but advocating in the meantime and letting the administration know that, of course, everybody's for a safe system for refugees and communities that welcome them, but we do believe we have a strong, safe system. So don't create a system that's going to keep refugees out of the country in large numbers. You know, have a be sure to have a safe system, but one that continues to be generous and welcoming.
Richard Murphy asks, are either of the H1A and H2A programs affected? That you know, for Ashley or Matt?
Hi, this is Ashley. So in addition to the possible executive order on immigration benefits, we have seen that there is text for another possible executive order on visas that look to reform the immigrant employment visa system. I have not had the chance to look at that, but we can certainly get back to you about that. I think that it's very likely that there will be movement on that, either addressed through the executive order, just in terms of not so much the numbers, because that would need to go through Congress and also have kind of a comment period. But I think that he can do certain things and interpret certain elements differently. This issue will also be an upcoming issue in the Congress, and I'm happy to follow up more with you offline on that. So if Tony can connect us, it's fine.
Okay. Folks, we've been on here now. We're supposed to have started about at 1:30, and we started a little bit past that, but we are at almost, what, 2:42, 2:41. Maybe we can go another minute if folks have questions. Here's one. How is the reunification process going to work for the seven countries after the 120-day ban?
I think, again, a good question, and one that and that could happen both on the refugee side, but also I think on the family petition side, you know, where somebody's a legal permanent resident or a U.S. citizen here. And I think, again, that will go back to, for example, on the family unity side, what is the country under consideration? Are they providing the information that's needed to help establish the identity of the person and whether the person's a risk to security? So I think that those are the measures that the administration has signaled they'd include.
And I think you may have answered this, but I don't recall. What about the status of current holders of travel documents to the United States, Matt?
If they're from the seven countries,
mm-hmm.
Then I think what they're looking at for those from the seven countries is, unless the person is a green card holder of the, you know, an LPR of the United States, or unless they're a dual citizen of a country, maybe one of the seven countries, but then also some country that's not barred, those two groups, there's been clarification from DHS that those two groups can come. In terms of, like, travel for others, again, like the seven countries for resettlement purposes and also resettlement in general, you know, the general rule is nobody's coming. But like I said earlier, there might be some where they make special exemptions for particular cases, not likely from the seven countries, but likely from the, or possible from the other countries. And then the other thing, I think Michael mentioned this as well, that also another group that will be able to travel from, that's from one of the seven countries, are the Iraqi special immigrant visas. So they'll be able to come despite the ban.
Okay. Great. Folks, I'm going to have to, I know there a lot of you have questions, and I'm looking at them. Stella, I'm just going to have to ask someone here to get back to you pretty quick about your question. And for other folks, please email your questions to me. I put my email address down in the chat box, but for you folks who don't have it memorized or committed to memory, it is acube@uscb.org. Again, for people who are unable to log into the webinar on their computers, we're going to, as a follow-up, resend these PowerPoint slides as well as the link to the recording, so that you all can view the slides and listen to the recording, and you know, if you need to, share it onto and pass it on to other folks. But I do want to thank my colleagues here at the USCCB, Ashley Feasley, Melissa Hastings, Matthew Wilch, and Michael Hill, for their informative presentation and the answers that they gave. Folks, it was a treat today, because it's very seldom that we have these fine legal minds in the same room at the same time. So you guys got the best from USCCB and MRS. Thank you all for participating in the webinar. I'm going to leave this final slide on so that you can see various ways to get in touch with Justice for Immigrants. So thank you all for participating. Please have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.